Now, Ask Dr. Love with psychotherapist, author, love and relationship expert Jamie Turndorf, Ph.D. For expert advice on love and relationships, call into the show at 888-463-6748. That's 888-GO-FOR-IT. Or you can submit your question online at AskDrLove.com. Now, here's Dr. Love.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Ask Dr. Love Radio. I'm Dr. Jamie Turndorf, and I want to welcome you once again to my show. In today's show, I'm going to talk about why loving without limits is your key to limitless love. So stay tuned as I explore the divine mystery of intimate relationships, and I reveal their real purpose in our lives, which is to act as soil for our soul development. Later in the show, I'm going to be answering three questions that I selected that were submitted to my site. The first one is called Contradictory Messages from a Man to a Woman. And here I help a woman who is heartbroken after her ex-boyfriend begged her to come back to him. And when she did, he did a 180 and verbally assaulted her and dumped her. And she wants to know WTF happened. So join me. Stay tuned as I decode what occurred. Now, in I Thought He Liked Me, But It Was Just a Misunderstanding and Now He's Avoiding Me, I help out a woman who is utterly heartbroken over a guy who came on strong and then backed up and said he only wanted to be friends, and then he disappeared entirely. And she wants to know if there is a way to preserve the friendship. So stay tuned as I help her find out how she can handle this kid using psychological kid gloves. And the third question is buzz, buzz. And here I work with a man whose girlfriend is leaving him, to use his own words, hanging and blue, while she pleasures herself with her sexual buzzsaw, alias vibrator, leaving him to handle his own sexual needs. So stay tuned as I advise him on how to get a handle on this situation. And then for Reading Between the Sheets, where I tackle those tough sexual problems, I'm going to answer a question that's called I Think I'm Messed Up, where I work with an insecure, overweight lesbian whose sex drive has involuntarily turned off with her girlfriend ever since her girlfriend started hanging around with skinny, attractive women. So stay tuned as I help her unravel the mystery behind her own sexual dry spell, and I show her how to get over her own sexual hump. Okay, now on to today's topic. Now, do you find yourself empty and yearning for more? More money, a bigger house, a better job, a better relationship? And have you found that when you finally get whatever it is that you want, you still feel hungry? Well, it could be that your hunger is actually what's called divine discontent. And I'm talking about the soul's universal hunger to unite with the divine and experience boundless love. Now, we all know that love relationships are the portal to paradise, a taste of heaven in the here and now, actually our training ground where we perfect our ability to love God. Now, I have a dear patient who doesn't believe in God or the afterlife or reincarnation. And in the end, that doesn't matter, because what I'm talking about boils down to love. Our soul's sole purpose remains the same, to perfect our ability to love better. So the question is, why is it that we often don't feel complete when we finally find love? Well, the reason is because we bring our starving, wounded selves to the table, and we unconsciously hope that our lovers and life partners are going to magically heal our wounds, feed our hungry souls, and fill all those voids inside ourselves. And, you know, for a brief moment during the honeymoon phase of a relationship, the dream almost seems attainable. We're living in heavenly bliss and we feel full. But then tragedy strikes. Around 18 to 24 months into every intimate relationship, something called the transference kicks in. Now, by transference, I'm referring to the unconscious process that causes us to see our partner as the parent who let us down. Here's how this happens. First, we unconsciously choose a partner who emotionally resembles the parent who let us down. I always call this setting the stage. Now, we do this so that we can recreate the most painful aspects of our childhood, hoping that this time around we're going to achieve what I call the happy ending, which is the healing of our old scar from childhood. Now, the sad fact is, because we choose partners who are similar to our parents, meaning they're just as limited and damaged as our parents were, we don't end up winning our happy ending. We just end up beating our heads on the proverbial rock, trying to get blood from a stone. But our need to heal is so strong that we just can't seem to give up, because giving up would feel like abandoning all hope of healing. So, sadly, each time we fail to finagle the goodies we want from our partners, our disappointment and our hurt and our anger mounts. And it's our anger that gets laid squarely in our partner's laps. So you can see this is how we end up light years away from the divine spiritual bond that our souls crave and deserve. So the question is, how can you set yourself free of this emotional bondage so that you can revel in the divine bond that you were destined to share? Well, the answer is consciousness. This is your first rung on the spiritual ladder. Consciousness consists of recognizing that in addition to relationships being the portal to paradise, they're also your spiritual training ground, the soil for your soul development, your dress rehearsal for heaven. And it's through relationships that we are invited to perfect our ability to love God better. Because God resides in all of us, loving others is synonymous with loving God. Now, the central aspect of a spiritually based relationship involves the decision on both partners' parts to help each other heal their old scars. And once you identify your particular old scars, then you both commit to feeding each other the proper emotional medicine that is the right emotional responses that you need to heal. And this is what we call the corrective emotional experience. This is how you put your love into action. My book, Till Death Do Us Part, is all about this, showing you how to identify and help each other use the relationship to heal your mutual old scars. Now, when you make this conversion, you have fully embraced the divine calling to help each other heal. And ultimately, love is your healing agent. And from now on, everything you say and do must be motivated by this mandate. You must vow to do no harm and to only say and do what you know is going to be beneficial to your partner and your relationship, no matter how hurt or angry you are. You never forget that what you say and do always boomerangs back on you. And that means if you hurt your partner, you hurt yourself. And if you feed your partner, you're feeding yourself. So what I'm talking about is living heaven now. You leap off the ledge of love. You dissolve the walls inside yourself to being more giving and loving. You love without limits. You love without a hook or a balance sheet. You know, the balance sheet I'm talking about. Well, I gave you this, so you owe me that. Or I gave you more than you gave me. You see love as a prayer. It's a sacrament that you offer before the altar of your beloved. You have reverence and you have respect for the gift of love that you've been granted, and you never let negative feelings overtake this gift. You are always grateful for that gift of love that you've been given. And as you love those on earth, you are perfecting your ability to love God better. And since God lives in each and every one of us, you need to love others the way you worship God. So I always say love is your call to arms, to open your arms more fully and drop your armor. So the heart muscle, like every muscle, grows stronger with use. And this is a discipline and a practice that fortifies your heart. And as an aside, you know, I want to say something about spiritual practices. Millions of people are engaged in various types of spiritual practices like yoga, meditation, and so on. You know what they are. Spiritual activity, like meditating, is designed to bring the individual into closer communion with God and spirit. But here's the thing. Spiritual practice is solitary. And the goal is to ease our individual suffering by learning to live in the now. These disciplines are excellent at training us in the discipline of being present and in the moment. But all these practices focus on the individual and they miss the relational aspect entirely. And I believe it's our highest and most divine calling to learn how to be in the now so that we can be present to others, to commune with them, share their joys and sorrows, to listen to them and support them in times of pain. So today, I'm going to ask you to expand your spiritual practice to include others, strangers, friends, family, and of course, your significant other. And I want you to cultivate what I call a relational meditation in which you begin to focus on being more present in the now to others. And here's the beauty of what I am proposing. As you practice this relational form of meditation, you're going to be present to your partner in his or her pain, present to listen, understand, and help your partner heal his or her old scars and vice versa. And as the pain of the past peels away for both of you, you will now find yourselves truly enjoying each other in the now, sharing in the pure light of love. And in reality, love is the ultimate in the now experience. If you're in the now, you're living in love. And the paradise you find in your earthly relationships is in direct proportion to the love you give. So let's start perfecting my 10 love skills now. Let me give you them. The first skill is see and listen to your beloved with the eyes and ears of your heart. Now, it's said that our deepest need is to be seen. For our lives to be complete, we need to be loved by someone who has seen us and seen us through the most difficult times and yet still loves us, because this is our basic need, to be seen to the bottom of our souls. We need our beloved to stand up and notice and to show us that he or she sees us. We all want to be acknowledged, good and bad. We want to feel important to our beloved. We have to know that our beloved has seen us at our worst and through our darkest times and still loves us. And our beloveds and our friends, families, and strangers need this from us also. And this does more than anything to help us survive in a soulless world. It also helps us transform the world. So that's what I mean by you be the pebble in a pond, the pond, the universal pond. Now, the second love skill is be grateful for the gift of love. We seem to forget just how very important our relationship is. And I want you to recognize what you've got and treat it with the care of a fragile egg. Handle it carefully with love, with kindness and respect. Treat yourself in the same way. And then hold your relationship as well, as high as you possibly can, even on the bad days. And remember, don't major in minor things regarding the little habits that you find annoying. Do they really matter? You know, this is a tough thing to do, but you want to consider that the offending behavior or event is really, really not that important in the big picture. Remember what Tony Roberts said, don't major in minor things, and ask yourself, will I even remember this event 5 years from now? And if you say no, then just let it go and just practice understanding and acceptance and never forget the gift of love that you have been given. Now, the third love skill is honor the physical bond. Now, remember the meaning of the word to consummate. I've said this on previous radio shows. The word means to bring to completion or fruition. So a physical relationship is supposed to bring to fruition every other aspect of your relationship. And when you become physically involved and you precede physical intimacy before you really know the deeper person, you are really putting the cart before the horse. You want to first know the deepest aspects of each other before you get physically close. We're really looking for that deeper understanding and the self-discovery that comes from a deep spiritual relationship before physically consummating your bond. Now, the fourth love skill is feel the fear and leap off the ledge of love. So let's face it, we're all afraid. We're afraid to love and lose through death, rejection, abandonment. We're afraid to get really close and experience the divine in our relationships because we're looking at the flip side, which is the loss. And then you're missing out on the joy. So to really live in joy now, to feel the fear and leap off the ledge, you can't futurize. Futurizing is synonymous with fear. You're thinking about all the things that will happen, and you aren't living and loving in the now. Okay. Before my engineer wants me to take a break, I'm trying to be good and be disciplined. I have to take a break, but I promise I will continue the rest of this list of my skills for loving as soon as I come back from my break. Be back in a moment on Ask Dr. Love Radio.
You're listening to Ask Dr. Love with Dr. Jamie Turndorf. To speak to Dr. Turndorf live on the air, call 888-463-6748. AskDrLove.com is the web's premier relationship advice site since 1996. Visit AskDrLove.com to search thousands of free relationship advice articles on any relationship issue you may have. Or you can submit a question to her free advice column. However, if you're listening live, why not call in? Don't be shy. Dr. Turndorf wants to help you, and this is a unique chance to get a personal answer from one of today's most respected experts. So, if you have a question for her, please call in now at 888-463-6748. That's 888-463-6748.
Begin!
You've discovered TalkZone.com, the best in internet talk radio.
Now back to Ask Dr. Love with Jamie Turndorf, PhD. Once again, here's Dr. Love.
I'm Dr. Jamie Turndorf, and I'm talking about the 10 love skills for elevating your relationship to its highest spiritual ground. So I'm up to skill number 5, which is be patient, because love is going to push every button, try every faith, challenge every strength, trigger every weakness, mock every value, and then leave you there to die. Sounds like, what am I doing? But once you begin to turn the corner and leave love's amateur zone behind, there's nothing to compare it to. So how do you get there? Well, you do it together. And you know, Marianne Williamson says that the highest purpose of intimacy is to call forth your beloved soul. Once love has made it through your walls, your heart will be changed forever and your life will be changed forever. And I know this is no easy task. It's not for the weak. It changes everything. It changes your heart. It changes your destiny. But they say he or she who survives love has survived a very difficult path, and the path is dark, but the end of the road is clearly well lit if you follow the light. So love helps you thrive and survive in a world that sometimes seems to lack real soul. And by your souls uniting, you are elevating yourselves into the light. Now, the 6th skill is be open and be vulnerable. Now, have you ever thought that the purpose of relationships is not to learn to hide your weak areas, but a place where you can learn to safely share them? So if the purpose of relationships is to grow and get closer to God, then isn't it okay to be human? Because God accepts you and loves you with all your flaws and warts. And this is true vulnerability. Think about how much strength it takes to be vulnerable. You can't play games and be vulnerable. These are incompatible realities. The reward to being open and vulnerable is huge. This is what opens you up to a much deeper, more heavenly bond. Now, the next love skill. Now, before I go to the next one, I just want to say one thing. When you're open and vulnerable, you really need to tell the truth. You have to tell the truth and be emotionally honest. You want to honor the other person in your honesty. That's the thing. Be kind to each other. So a lot of people will say, well, I have to say the truth. That's just necessary. But that is a fallacy, because under the guise of being truthful, people assault each other. So you only want to be truthful and honest to the degree that you know it's going to be beneficial to you, the other person in your relationship. So you want to be open to the glory, the tragedy, the shadows, the wicked side of yourself and of your partner. Be open about that side, and you are going to have incredible intimacy and your love will flourish. Now, the 7th love skill is make your relationship your sacred ground, your safety zone, your place to land. So you want to be thinking more with what's called the spiritual mind more than the physical mind. The physical mind is about limits, guilt, error, anger, sadness, taking, tears, fear. It's all closed. The spiritual mind, which is the home of your spirit, is about forgiveness, giving, joy, laughter, courage, openness. And in this place, you're giving gifts, meaningful, thoughtful gifts that would touch your beloved's heart and show that you've been listening and you know what matters to him or her. Okay? Love skill number 8. Don't hold back the compliments. This tip goes back to the basic need of feeling seen. Because if your beloved has to ask for compliments all the time, it doesn't count. You want to show gratitude and appreciation. Remember who brought you together in the first place and be grateful for that. And it's important to take daily note of what you appreciate about your beloved. Even on the tough days, think about what you're grateful for. It helps also to write it down. And I'm talking write love notes. Don't just thank God or Yahweh or Allah for what you love about your beloved. Write it down and send a little note and verbalize it too. Leave your notes in surprising places, okay? Now here's love skill number 9. Get to know your beloved all over again each and every day. Be born again each day. Look at your partner through the eyes of a new lover. Be a good listener. Ask questions. Pay attention like you really care because you do. Don't let the lesser important aspects of life get you down or in your way. And don't be lazy and assume you know everything about your partner. Be reborn again with the fresh new eyes of a young newborn. And the 10th skill, the 10th love skill, is keep committing to be each other's healers. Because with mystical spiritual relationships, there is a demand for spiritual healing. We call it forth in ourselves and in our beloved. And if a relationship is not healing, it's not a spiritual relationship. Okay, I want to just read you a little passage that I wrote. It's actually the epilogue of my latest book, and it really describes what I'm talking about our purpose in life and how we must open to this divine, spiritual, loving place at every moment. Here it is. I call it no regrets. I was driving last evening on a country lane en route to a group that I lead. Out of the mist, a young deer suddenly materialized. She stood in front of my car motionless in the middle of the road. I stopped the car and asked her why she wasn't moving. Then I saw her front left leg was injured. She wasn't able to bear weight on it. She struggled to limp her way across the road on 3 legs. I felt a stabbing pain in my heart. I started to cry. I asked aloud, "Who will take care of you? It's so cold, and you have no warm place to lie down to rest and heal." The creature finally made it to the other side of the road. I opened my window and spoke lovingly to her, tears streaming down my cheeks. I told her I'm so sorry that she's suffering, and I wished I could help her. I sent her a wave of love. Time suddenly stood still. The deer stared into my eyes and listened to me. I stared back into her brown eyes like twin pools of melted chocolate. I saw the moonlight shimmering on her velvety coat. We connected. It was such a painful but beautiful moment. It was then I realized the lesson. Life is full of pain and suffering. Our purpose in life isn't to avoid pain. We aren't supposed to sidestep the aches that tear at our hearts, the rage that makes our loins tremble, the fear that sheens our skin in the dead of night. Our purpose is to face our feelings and fully connect to others in our pain and in theirs. Life is a death sentence for most of us, not because of our feelings, but because we avoid our feelings of hate, fear, anger, love, passion, and jealousy. We avoid because we think we can't survive the feelings. But feelings don't kill us. Not feeling does. And so we live a walking death, a life sentence that ends with regret over never having fully lived. I'm reminded of a patient who came to me because she couldn't have an orgasm. I soon realized that she was under the influence of psychological anesthesia. She had put her psyche to sleep to avoid feelings of anger. When we anesthetize negative feelings, we end up unable to feel pleasure and joy. We have all become deer, frozen in the headlights of our fear. Our lives are nothing more than a psychological chess game. Like icy marble chess pieces, we withdraw from anticipated attack. We retreat and sidestep for fear that past hurts will follow us into the future. We imagine nightmarish what-if scenarios of how we might be hurt or hurt again. In the process, we become alienated from ourselves and others, never fully stepping into our own lives. We sleepwalk through our days, dying a slow death as our life hemorrhages away day by day, trapped in coffins of our own making. How can we see disconnection from our core and from others as the self-preservation? It is only by connecting to our inner life and to the inner lives of others that we can live and love fully. Now is all we have. None of us knows what the future holds, but I do know that none of the calamities that we brace for ever happen. So why limp through life guarding against disasters that never come? We can never see when or how the cruel hand of fate will strike, but when she does, she is sure to serve a curveball that we never saw coming. We must stop straitjacketing our hearts, bracing for demons that never materialize. We must live life fully in the now, live like we're dying at each moment, live like each day is our last. Then when the dagger of death strikes, we will be able to say on our dying breath, at least I lived and loved fully, and I died without regret. Well, that's how we're supposed to live. It's an ideal. Make it your reality. Now, let me tell you a couple tweets on this topic, and I'm going to take a brief break. And when I return, I'm going to go to the phone because I am seeing that Gomez is on the line. So let me first do the tweets. To overcome any tussle, stretch your heart muscle. Here's another. Give fear a shove and leap off the ledge of love. Love is a different call to arms. Love calls you to love fully with open arms. Being inconsiderate is to be a love illiterate. For greater ardor, drop your armor. Being more nice is your key to paradise. And last but not least, risk being more open and your love will be smoking. All right, let me take a little break. And when I come back, I'm going to talk with Gomez. Be right back on Ask Dr. Love Radio.
You're listening to Ask Dr. Love with Dr. Jamie Turndorf. To speak to Dr. Turndorf live on the air, call 888-463-6748. That's 888-463-6748. If you like what you're hearing, you can learn about Dr. Turndorf's techniques for turning conflict into connection and healing in her critically acclaimed, groundbreaking book, Till Death Do Us Part, Unless I Kill You First, a step-by-step guide for resolving relationship conflict. Find out more about this book and read a free excerpt by visiting AskDrLove.com. This is Ask Dr. Love with Dr. Jamie Turndorf. And if you have a question for her, please call in now at 888-463-6748. This show is for you, the listeners, so please give her a call now. You're listening to Ask Dr. Love with Jamie Turndorf, Ph.D. Once again, here's Dr. Love.
I'm Dr. Jamie Turndorf, and I want to go right to the phone and take my caller, Gomez. Hello, Gomez. What's your question for me?
Hello, Dr. Love. I was just listening to all of your 10 points, and there are two things that struck me about the about what you've been saying today. The first is that, well, I'm not religious, but I do have a powerful experience with people who I care for and love, and these 10 things are a part of my experience. The one that isn't a part of my experience is the one about honoring the physical bond. But it, with one person in particular, all these other aspects are facets of my experience. And in a way, it's almost as though that one thing has become much less important. In a way, it really doesn't matter to me. It's all these other things that are I don't know. Do you get what I'm saying? It's just like it doesn't need the physical manifestation. All it needs is this other stuff. And it's interesting because I'm not a religious person, but all of this fits into my experience in a way. So
love is your religion. See, the thing is, when you say the physical is not part of the bond, what I'm hearing is this has not been a love relationship that's been consummated. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, right. It's not a consummated relationship, and it's not a relationship that's ever going to be a physical one. And there are some reasons why.
Right. So, you know, the thing is, when I said honor the physical bond, if you read between the lines of what I said, I was taught the fact that people jump in the sack as a substitute for emotional intimacy. The intimacy and the love bond that you're sharing with this person is so deep. It is such a complete communion. You don't even need the physical consummation. You have entered her or his soul completely, and you are one, body, mind, and soul. So if everybody could experience this level of emotional and spiritual communion and connection, I would wish for everyone to be able to experience what you're experiencing. And as you've said, you don't even need the physical. The bond is so deep. I get it.
Yeah. Wow. What a nice thing to hear.
Thank you so much for sharing that.
Thanks. This is a very good show.
Glad you're enjoying it. And thanks for calling, Gomez.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye. So isn't it great what he was talking about? If everyone could focus on achieving this exalted, transcendental level of connection and communion, can you imagine how much better the world would be, how much stronger our relationships would be? And then, if you want to consummate physically, it'll just take you to another plane, but you don't have to. This man who called in knows exactly what we're talking about that deep soul communion. It's so incredibly rich. And there are people who have sex and never reach that level of communion and love. All right, let me go to the question that I promised to answer first, which was the contradictory messages from a man to a woman. Here's the question. Dear Dr. Love, why would a man contact me in a friendly way to say he wanted to get back together with me, beg me to call him, and then when I do talk to him, actually be very mean and say he has no feelings for me and I am a waste of his time, among other terrible things? I thought I might really like him before this because he had been so charming in the past and told me he wanted me so much that he was practically in love with me, and I'm very, very confused. Well, you should be confused because this guy really gave you mixed signals. First he lured you in, and then he drove the knife in. It sounds to me like this guy ran a major number on you. By this I mean, you said that he told you he wanted to get back together with you. Well, if you were the one who broke up with him last time, he may have harbored resentment toward you for dumping him. So he roped you in so that he could be the one to dump you this time. That's the classic seduce and abandon game. Now, if it was he who broke up with you the last time, then he's a very confused pup. Think about it. He broke up with you, then begged you to come back, only to abuse you and dump you again. If this is the story, it means that he's a highly conflicted person and very confused and conflicted about getting close. But one thing I do know is he's an intensely angry guy because his behavior was highly abusive to you. Now, I bet that he dumped on you the kind of treatment that he grew up with. And I'm going to bet that he had a very mean parent who ran hot and cold. You know, alcoholic and drug addicted people act this way. And if he grew up with this kind of parent, an addicted parent, then he clearly was highly damaged. And the way he appears to be handling his injury, rather than using the relationship for its divine purpose of healing, it seems to me that he's handling his injury by dumping his painful feelings onto someone else. This is what projection is all about. A person takes his or her unbearable pain and then dumps it onto the other person, using that other person like an emotional toilet bowl. And if you notice, he really scripted the entire event so that he could dump his turd into you. He's like a stage director. He placed the furniture on the stage, then he blindfolded you with seductions, and then he let you fall on the furniture. So I'm very, very sorry this happened to you, and I know it's dreadful. Now, there's something I want you to do, and I want you to look back at your relationship with him and see if there were any clues that you overlooked, clues that would have warned you as to the kind of person he is. Now, I bet in hindsight, if you examine the clues, you're going to realize that you didn't listen to your instincts. And I bet you there were signs that he runs hot and cold and that he has a sadistic and mean personality. Now, if you ignored those clues, this is an important lesson for you. Because in the future, you have to listen to and trust your instincts and not ignore your own red flags. Oftentimes, you know, we look the other way because the person we're dating is exactly like the parent who let us down. And we're drawn like a moth to a flame to damaged and defective partners precisely because we want to recreate our childhood drama and try to fix it. So to understand more about this, read my archived articles on repetition compulsion and unfinished business, and you'll understand what I'm talking about. Now, if it's true that you were looking to recreate your own old scar from childhood, then you need to get busy and heal that wound. My book, Till Death Do Us Part, Unless I Kill You First, is going to show you how to do that. Because if you don't do this healing, you're going to be a target for another man who's looking to vent his anger at his parents onto you. So I want you to do the work, and then I want to hear from you. Let me know how you make out. All right. Let me go to another question that came in. This is a long title. It says, I thought he liked me, but it was a misunderstanding, and now he's avoiding me. All right, get ready. This is a long story. Dear Dr. Love, first of all, I want to say that I am a teen in high school, so this might all sound silly and immature to you. In that case, I'm really sorry. Basically, I've liked this guy for about a year now. I thought we had a pretty good thing going because it seemed like he kind of liked me. He played with my hair in class, said sweet things like, I'll sleep whenever you sleep, took pictures of me and kept them, chatted, cammed with me every single night for long periods of time, for a couple of weeks, or maybe it was months, told someone I was the coolest girl he ever met, bought me an expensive gift, took me out somewhere, never denied when asked if he liked me by other people. The list goes on and on. A number of people thought he liked me too, and a guy, mutual friend, actually sent me a chat where he asked if he had feelings for me, and he said, yeah, I do. So with that confidence boost, I began interacting with him a bit more flirtatiously because I thought that he liked me. So embarrassing now to think of it. So apparently it was a big misunderstanding on my part. I don't really understand what's happening. I don't think I was really wrong to assume that he liked me because he said, yeah, I do, that one time. I mean, that's the natural conclusion to draw, right? Or have I just been interpreting everything the way I wanted to instead of the way things actually were this whole time? Maybe I was living in delusion this entire time, thinking everything was what I wanted to think instead of how things actually were. Well, my friend said that he told her that he only likes me as a good friend and that he feels like a bastard for hurting me and there's nothing to like about him and that he would do anything for me to forget about him. I felt so, so guilty, embarrassed, and bad when I found this out. My friend apparently told him that she supported me and won't help him to tell me to forget about him. And so he took things in his own hands, I guess. And 2 days ago, he started avoiding me hardcore, even deactivated Facebook and made a new one with a fake name, his friend told me. Never on video call anymore. Doesn't reply if I type something. I suppose it's because he doesn't want to hurt me or anything, but to be absolutely honest, this hurts me much worse than anything. I mean, I can take unrequited love just fine. Life goes on and I'm not going to be a baby about it, but this just feels so empty and despairing and I don't know what to do. I already typed him a letter-like thing telling him that I know and that it's okay and thanks for being considerate about me, but his only response was to reactivate his Facebook, though he's still rarely, if ever, on or maybe just hides from me. He said absolutely nothing to me for 3 days by now, and I really feel absolutely awful. I don't pity myself or anything, but rather I feel bad because he was under so much pain due to the stress I must have put on him no matter what he does. He's always selfless and puts me before him, and that's the only part that makes me want to cry. Also, he's a kind of shy type of guy, so I don't want to scare him off by going up to him in school and being like, hey, what happened? Can you please not avoid me anymore? I'll do anything. I just really want us to remain friends. What should I do from here on? And what is happening? My mind is a blur of emotions and I'm so, so confused. Of course, I won't force anything. I just want to be on talking friend terms again. That's really the only part that hurts the most for me, that because of a silly crush, I may have lost a really good friend. Okay. Listen, you obviously you care for this guy, and he'd be lucky to have a friend like you, believe me. What's happened here all boils down to his statement that there's nothing to like about him. Well, let's face it, his self-esteem is lower than whale turd. And when a person doesn't like himself, when his confidence is too low, it makes it hard to have a relationship. So let me explain to you what I mean by that. What I think happened here is that he really did like you, and not only as a friend. But because his self-esteem is so low, I think he became terrified that you wouldn't want him once you got to know him. So he was basically afraid to enter into a spiritually based relationship where he allowed himself to be fully seen and open. So I think what he did was he engaged in a preemptive strike because he was so afraid if you got to know him, you wouldn't like him. He dumped you before you could dump him. And his guilty behavior after the fact tells me that he's ashamed of his behavior. Now, as for you, I'm concerned that you are far too willing to put all the blame on yourself by saying, I feel bad because he was under so much pain due to the stress I must have put on him. No matter what he does, he's always selfless and puts me before him. I don't agree that he's so selfless and puts you before him. His low self-esteem actually makes him quite selfish. He ran off, he hid, he deleted his Facebook account, and in essence, he had no regard for how you feel. Now, the question is what you can do about all this. And since you clearly don't want to lose this guy and you want to keep a friendship, then it would seem you could try another angle. Since you already wrote to him and thanked him for his considerateness, at this point, what do you have to lose by laying your cards on the table and telling him that you know what he feels awful to have hurt you and that you can see he folded up his tent and disappeared in shame? Then you could tell him that since he's such a caring person and doesn't want to do you harm, then why doesn't he just be your friend? That would make you happy, and then he could stop beating himself up for hurting you. It's worth a try. But I'm sensing that this guy has serious, big-time problems. Notice that he beats himself to a pulp, which further lowers his self-esteem. And I'm thinking he may have a sick need to hang himself up on the cross, which means he won't accept your offer, which would allow him to stop the mea culpa routine. So if he doesn't come around after what I suggested to you, you just have to accept that this guy's too damaged to have a real relationship of any kind. And before I say goodbye to you, I just want you to be aware of how willing you are to take all the blame on yourself. Because remember, you said, I feel bad because he was under so much pain due to the stress you put on him. Okay? I don't want you to be so quick to blame yourself. And I want you to be very careful to not do yourself harm because you have no reason to blame yourself. You read his signals correctly. He's just a very confused and conflicted kid. So let me know what happens after you play the card I suggest. All righty? Let me take a little break. And I'll be back with you in a moment on Ask Dr. Love Radio.
You're listening to Ask Dr. Love with Dr. Jamie Turndorf. To speak to Dr. Turndorf live on the air, call 888-463-6748. That's 888-463-6748. If you've recently been through a breakup and are looking for a second chance, wondering how you can reconcile with your ex, or if it's even possible after all you've been through, Dr. Turndorf's latest book, Make Up, Don't Break Up, presents her 5-step plan for reconciling with your ex. This plan was developed out of years of research, working with thousands of couples at her Center for Emotional Communication. This is a proven no-hype and no-nonsense method that gets right to the root of the problem to guide you to the right path towards reigniting a lasting relationship. For more about Make Up, Don't Break Up, visit AskDrLove.com. You're listening to Ask Dr. Love with Jamie Turndorf, Ph.D. Once again, here's Dr. Love.
I'm at the point in the show where I'm answering the third question that I selected to answer for this week's show. And this one's called Buzz Buzz. At first, when I saw that question title, I thought the guy was going, Buzz Buzz, is the doctor in? But now you're going to see the buzzing is the sound of his girlfriend's vibrator. Dear Dr. Love, I've been dating my current girlfriend for around 5 years. We've been living together for about a year, and I discovered she has been watching porn on a pretty regular basis, which kind of left me hanging and blue most nights. I asked her to stop watching it because it was something that I was uncomfortable with, and after some struggle, she finally quit. When she quit watching porn, apparently she quit having sex too, because we're a 20-year-old couple who has had sex all of 6 times over a 2-month period. When I try talking to her about it, she says she can't get wet and it's a medical problem, but she still has no problem getting wet for her vibrator, sometimes multiple times a day. I'm beginning to feel very sexually frustrated and abandoned, which is causing misplaced hostility. What do you think the problem is and what should I do? Okay. Listen, I hear that her porn activity has left you hanging in blue, and I think you mean this quite literally. And I also hear that you said when she gave up the porn at your request that she quit having sex with you too. Then you said that you've had sex with her 6 times in a 2-month period. No, so she didn't exactly quit altogether, and I'm making this distinction because it's important that you realize that the language you're using isn't accurate. It may feel to you like she quit altogether because 6 times in 2 months isn't enough sex for a young man like you, but I want you to see the difference, because if you say to her what you told me, that she quit having sex, she will feel wrongly accused, and this is going to get her back up, which won't make her want to get down with you. Okay, now let's look at what she is doing. She's preferred porn to you. She tells you that she can't get wet and has a medical problem, yet you say that you know for a fact that she's getting wet multiple times a day with her vibrator. So basically what she's telling you is that she prefers solo sexual encounters rather than an intimate sexual connection with you. Now, I'm assuming she wasn't always this way. I'm assuming that if she had been this way, you wouldn't have moved in together. So what's changed since you've moved in together? Well, what she calls a medical problem sounds more like an emotional and relational problem to me. This girl has to be angry, and she's dangling her dildo right under your nose. How else would you know that she's using it so many times a day and getting wet with it? Or are you just doing some dildo detective work and spying on her dildo at various points throughout the day? In any case, it sure sounds like she is using her dildo to stick it to you. In other words, your girlfriend sounds passive-aggressive, and she's using her dildo to punish you indirectly and passively. She's withholding sex from you and substituting you for a fake penis. And her message is indirectly hostile and castrating. My point is, she's getting her rocks off in more ways than one. When dealing with passive aggression, the key is to get the person to cop to his or her anger and put it into words. Because when the feelings are put into words, then we can set out to resolve the problem. And so long as the feelings are being released in actions, in this case by using her dildo as a club, there is no resolution possible. This is because the action releases the anger and there's nothing to discuss or work through. The feelings are gone. The problem is a passive-aggressive personality disorder is like a willow that's bent. It's bent to the point that the person only knows how to release anger indirectly. And there's also an unconscious sense of gratification that comes from venting your anger in these indirect ways. And that's why it's not easy to get someone to give up this gratification. So basically, we got to help her to see that what she's doing, the way she's venting her anger, is ruining her relationship with you. She's driving you away and she's wrecking her life. And if she doesn't address this pattern, she's never going to be able to keep a relationship. So I would put it to her, but not in the way you want, at least not yet. I mean, I would say that you are aware of the fact that she's using her dildo and getting wet with it, which means she has no medical problem. And then next you could say that choosing to have sex with her dildo over you sends a very clear message. And then you have to ask her if she knows what she's feeling when she makes that choice. How does she want you to feel, and how does she want you to interpret her actions? Now, she's probably going to refuse to cop to her anger. Then you can speak it for her. Tell her that what she's doing is an indirect F you. And if she doesn't want to admit her feelings of anger and tell you why she's so mad at you, and she persists in expressing her anger indirectly, she's going to ruin your relationship. And then I would come in for the kill and let her know that she'll never be able to make a relationship work unless she does this work. Now, keep in mind that she may not be angry with you personally. She may hate her father or men in general, but she may have been abused. But nevertheless, it's common for partners to displace their anger that's meant for their parents onto their partners. So if she wants to have a loving relationship with you, she's going to have to own her anger and figure out its origins. And if she has old scars, which I'm betting she does, then you can offer to help her heal them in your relationship. That's the divine purpose of our relationships. Now, no healing is ever going to happen until she drops the dildo and starts facing the music. So I want to hear from you how you do with her. You give her this clear explanation of what she's doing and the impact it's going to have on her life. I'm very hopeful that she will do the work with you. All righty. Now I have my reading between the sheets question. And this is a very interesting question. It kind of relates to the little piece that I read before about the deer and the woman who was anesthetizing all her emotions and wasn't living fully. Listen up. This is cool. In I Think I'm Messed Up, here's the question. My girlfriend and I have been together for 4 years. At the beginning of our relationship, about a year in, I found out that she was talking to other women. We're both females. She's 24 and I'm 29. We briefly broke up about a month later, but then we got back together. Our sex was incredible in the beginning. We had sex a lot, sometimes five times a day. Damn, you're going to get a clit callus. Got to be careful. Now, we also smoked a lot of marijuana. I know that some case studies claim that marijuana decreases your sex drive. And I'm a big girl and have lots of insecurities. And given her, she never actually physically cheated, talking to other women in the beginning and my being insecure, I have to say that within the past 3 years, my libido has almost completely vanished. I do not desire sex at all anymore. When she asks, it feels like it's more of a chore for me, and I make her feel bad because I don't want to have sex, which makes her feel bad. Then when I'm at work and she has friends over, which are skinny and attractive, and I think that she's doing things with them, and I often accuse her of such, claiming that she doesn't find me attractive or she would rather sleep with them. She often tries to get me to engage in sex with her and tries very hard, and I still feel no desire. When I'm taking a shower in the morning, they often masturbate quietly so she doesn't hear because she gets mad. I guess we have a lot of problems, it seems. My question is, what is wrong with me? What is wrong with me? I find her sexy as hell, and I still want her, and I really need help, and we've been separated for a week. I also get very mad and often rage and use her as an outlet for such rage. I'm not physically violent. I just say very hurtful things, and then when she cries, I continue until we smoke a joint, and then I'm calm again. I don't understand what's going on with me. Please help me fix this. She's given me 2 weeks to address my problem, or I lose the love of my life and my best friend forever. You should know she has bipolar and PTSD from previous incidents in her life, and she's been diagnosed with depression. Also, my dad is bipolar and has paranoid schizophrenia. Please tell me I'm not like my dad. I do have an appointment with a doctor soon, a psychological doctor, but I just wanted to have an idea before I see the doctor what's wrong with me. So I hear that you're worried that you're bipolar or you're schizophrenic like your father. But first I want to know, do you actually have extreme mood fluctuations which characterize bipolar disorder? Do you swing from high to low? Because you didn't mention periodic depression, and bipolar is you swing from mania to depression. Now, it's true that some bipolar patients will rage when they are in a manic phase, but you didn't seem to say that your raging is cyclical. It seems as though the rage occurs all the time and in response to your fearing that she's cheating on you. So if anything, I'm thinking you learned to pattern your behavior after your dad. And if he raged at you when he was in a manic phase, you may have learned to act like him. And now you rage at her the way he raged in front of you or raged at you. Okay? Now, as far as schizophrenia, this condition causes paranoid and delusional thinking. Now, I do notice that you're convinced that your girlfriend is cheating on you. And the question again is whether this is a paranoid delusion or whether you have reason to suspect her. And from what you said, she did talk to other women and she does hang around with skinny and attractive female friends. So you do have some reason to feel insecure, and that's not delusional. And what I think is afflicting you is a powerful defense mechanism. You're in the grips of what I spoke of before, psychological anesthesia. In other words, your mind is numbing your sex drive when it comes to her, but you still have drive when you're alone because you're safe. So the point is you're afraid to allow yourself to open up sexually with her because it seems you're afraid of being heard and abandoned. And your fear of abandonment seems tied to your feeling insecure about your body. So clearly your size, your body size, wasn't an impediment for her. You did have sex 5 times a day. Now, you said she's talking to other women. And by this, I want to know, talking as friends, or do you mean that she's on the prowl for another partner? You also said she has skinny friends over when you're not working. And are you thinking that she's cheating on you, or are you just freaking out because of your own insecurities and your low self-esteem? Now, you would benefit from individual therapy for sure to help you feel better about yourself. Also, read Makeup, Don't Break Up, because that book will show you, my book will show you how to raise your personal net worth. So when you're feeling more comfortable in your own skin, you won't be as inclined to feel jealous or suspicious of her friendships with other women. When you're less afraid of being cheated on, I think your sexual numbness will thaw. But I also want your girlfriend to do some couples therapy with you, because she has a hand in what's going on here. She sounds like she's pushing you, she's punishing you for your refusing to give her sex by talking to and hanging out with attractive women, which she knows threatens you. Now, I know she's putting the entire mess on you, and this is not cool. She's giving you 2 weeks to fix yourself, and that's an entirely unrealistic goal and ultimatum, and the ultimatum has a punishing quality to it, too, because she's obviously angry with you. Maybe she's furious over what you say to her when you rage, okay? But I want her to understand that she's angry with you over what you've said in anger. Tell her that you know that it must have hurt her very much, that you don't have sex with her, and tell her that you're going to work on what I have outlined to you. But you have to explain that your sexual shutdown is a defense mechanism to protect you from being abandoned, and tell her that your fear is fueled by your low self-esteem and body issues. But then you have to tell her that if you're going to make it as a couple, she has to work with you in couples therapy to understand what she's doing to fuel your insecurities. And here's a little word of warning. There are many people who claim to know how to do couples therapy and don't have a clue. So I'm sorry to have to say this, but bad therapy is worse than none. So make sure you choose someone who has advanced training as a couples therapist. I really wish you well. This can be worked through, and I want to hear how you do. All right, that's all I've got for you today. It was my pleasure to be with you again on Ask Dr. Love Radio, and I'll be with you again next week. Meanwhile, leap off the ledge of love.